Good morning, everyone. Coming to you live from somewhere in the Middle East, it is Saturday morning's hottest streaming media political talk show, Inside the Eye Live with The Fed. Heck, did I just hear someone tell a standing member of Congress that if it were up to them, they would dump the Israelis tomorrow? Sounds like something you might hear right here on Inside the Eye Live.
The Fetch. What a man. Oh, my God, you have to listen to that show. He was brilliant. I didn't know he had gonads of steel like that and a mind like a frigging razor. I didn't realize he was so clear. He cut through this that cognitive dissonance that is going on in the whole Patriot music movement.
And now it's time for Inside the Eye Live. Intelligent media for the politically aware. From Riyadh, excuse me, the capital of Saudi Arabia, this is The Fetch, and you are live Inside the Eye. Today's date is Saturday, May the 5th. I think that's actually a Cinco de Mayo day out there. But anyway, Saturday, May the 5th, 2017, and a good Saturday morning to all of you listening in the United States and Canada, and a good late afternoon to evening to all of you listening in the European and Asian time zones, and of course, wherever you are listening out there on the World Wide Web or our FM and micro FM broadcasting outlets, may all be well with you and yours. The weather here is, well, hot. It's hitting a high of about 103 degrees today. However, there is a 44% chance of scattered showers between the 6 to 7 o'clock in the evening hour, which is coming up in about an hour here, as a isolated storm cell makes its way towards Riyadh. Winds have been pretty steady, 10 to 13 miles per hour out of the south to southeast, while the relative humidity throughout most of the day has been around 13%. Humidity, of course, will increase a little bit as that isolated storm makes its way here. However, it's not here yet. But we are expecting perhaps a rain shower within the hour to hour and a half here in Riyadh. Winds should fall down to around 5 miles per hour as nightfall settles in. And temperatures throughout the useful part of the evening should fall to about 84 degrees towards, say, 1 o'clock in the morning, while ultimate lows are expected to hit a very, very warm 80 degrees in the hour before sunrise. Here in Riyadh, the festive Ramadan month is rapidly approaching, and so excursions to the local supermarket shows extensive stockpiles of all kinds of basic staples, from rice to pasta to cooking oils, and of course, much, much more. In fact, getting out and about here in Riyadh, the malls have their decorations up, which, funny enough, take on the same feel and festivity as you might find during the Christmas season. With the Ramadan month falling during the end of the school year this year, there is a huge rush to complete any and all projects for and targeting the education sector, as universities and public schools have been mandated by royal decree to shut down the school year 3 weeks earlier than scheduled. That means that I have been quite busy, as I have already received notice that I am free to leave in a couple of weeks now, all of which, of course, is pending my ability to complete work in progress and on behalf of the clients. But I do indeed hope to be back in Jordan by June the 1st. In this week's show, we are going to be looking at European, United States, and Middle Eastern issues, all of which immerse the conversation into what should be 3 hours of intelligent media for the politically aware. So settle in and join us if you are so inclined in the chat room, InsideTheEyeLive.com. That's InsideTheEyeLive.com. You can click on the live chat button, and that will get you through the door. And also, telephone lines are going to be open up early. 1-347-688-2902. That's 1-347-688-2902. In a story, you can chalk down to some things are just more idiotic than others, and you can't get better proof that educators in the United States have completely lost it. A university in Florida is going to be awarding a posthumous university degree in aeronautical science to Trayvon Martin, the thug that was killed by George Zimmerman in an altercation in Florida back in 2012. So to many of you familiar with that story, apparently, according to the liberal loons running Florida Memorial University, a posthumous degree in aeronautical engineering is going to be granted in honor of the steps he, that would be Trayvon Martin, took during his young life towards becoming a pilot. The award is to be presented to Trayvon's parents, and he will be recognized during the university's commencement ceremonies. His mother, Sabrina Fulton, who graduated from the university with an English degree, and his father, Tracy Martin, will accept the award, and the two have turned to advocacy work and working in the social justice business with headquarters on that campus. And I have a bit more on the stupidity coming out of campus activism a bit later in the show, but let's delve into some of the more pressing international events. The big news of the day is perhaps the French election, which is due to be held tomorrow. The finalists in France's most turbulent election in decades have hit the campaign trail for the last time, visiting cathedrals at opposite ends of the country before 47 some odd million voters are expected to choose their next president tomorrow, which is, of course, actually, no, tomorrow. Is it May 6th or is it Monday, May 7th? I take that back. Is it May 6th? No, it's May 6th today, everybody. Why didn't somebody tell me? It's May 6th. I was thinking today was May 5th. All right, we're on May 6th. Is that right? Wow, I've lost track of time. Ooh, it's tough doing these radio shows from around the world. All right, it's May 6th then locally, guys. Sorry about that. Today's date's May 6th, not May 5th. You know what happened is, I don't know why, but my mouse, whenever it gets close to showtime, my mouse from my laptop, which is a Bluetooth mouse, it just shuts down. I mean, I can't get it to work. And I've rebooted this darn computer a couple times and it just doesn't work. It doesn't want to work. So I'm like stuck trying to like really multitask here to keep this thing on schedule. And I kind of ad-libbed that date there. I assumed it was May 5th. All right. Anyways, back to the story here. France's election runoff system is, of course, the last election was held on April 23rd of this year, just a couple of weeks ago. According to graphs released by France's Interior Ministry, there are some 47,520,000 registered voters, of which, well, we actually have a call coming in, and I'm going to actually go ahead and take that call. 813 area code. Hi, welcome to Inside the Eye Live. Welcome to Inside the Eye Live. Good morning. Good morning. Don't tell me we're going to have one of those days starting off fresh with problems, options. I'm checking my Skype connection, everybody. General audio settings, USB codec speakers going out is correct. It's going to my USB. That's fine. All right. Try one more time. I'm sorry you couldn't get through there, but what can I do? Maybe I'll reboot the computer or something at the break, but I don't really want to do that. I don't want to do that either. Okay, so back to this story. According to graphs released by France's Interior Ministry, some 47,520,000 registered voters, of which 36 million voted in the April 23rd final election, are expected to somehow partake in the election tomorrow. This is pitting Marine Le Pen of the National Front, who took 7,678,000 votes on that April 23rd pre-qualifier, and Emmanuel Macron of En Marche, who received some 8,656,000 votes. François Fillon from the Republicans, they took like 7,213,000 votes. Jean-Luc Mélenchon, who was actually the original favorite, from the France, La France Insoumise. I can't speak French. Anyways, he took 7 million votes, and there's another 4 million votes split between three additional parties. So really, this election is coming down to how many of these additional votes can Macron or Le Pen pick up from these additional parties out there. And let me see here. But that's really what it's boiling down to from just the pure numbers point of view, is how much can these guys pick up from each of these parties out there. And of course, it's tomorrow. The press is out there claiming, well, actually, there's other issues going on. Obviously, it's a huge election for Europe. The election represents a huge, or let's just say a very stark contrast between the very pro-EU, open borders, essentially a banker, Macron against the French nationalist Le Pen. And it's interesting to see some of the headlines coming out of France, because what they're talking about, quite honestly, is all of this. Macron is the centrist. Macron is this. And then always Le Pen is being labeled as an extremist. And Mr. Macron is expected to win something like 8.25 million voters from these additional people that did not make it into the final round here. That would be Mélenchon and Benoit. I don't know who these people are. I took this from a story, and it looks kind of strange. I don't recall Mr. Hamon. But nonetheless, guys, they... Okay. I can tell this is going to be an interesting show. I got a music here going. Where did you start? Okay, get rid of you. All right. So basically, guys, it's coming down to that. It's going to be a very big thing to watch. Now, Mr. Fillon, again, he's been a favorite to win the election according to the press. Or not Mr. Fillon, but Macron. But when Mr. Fillon, who was the original favorite, when he was giving his concession speech a while back, he was saying that the National Front has a history of violence, and it would bankrupt France, especially by plunging the EU into chaos and taking France out of the euro. And he goes on to say extremism can only give rise to division within France, and so I urge you to vote against extremism. I will vote for Emmanuel Macron. It's my duty. Oh, isn't that nice sounding? The reality of it is, guys, is that we're hearing the same rhetoric coming out of what we heard out of the United States election. If you recall, Donald Trump's supporters were considered violent. But the reality of it is that a lot of these Macron supporters have proven to be exceedingly violent. There was a lot of violence after Le Pen won. So we see the exact same patterns that are coming out of the American election. This establishment system is pulling every dirty trick out of the book. But the truth of the matter is France is a basket case right now politically. You look at its streets. Paris is basically, in many parts of France now, or not parts of France, but many parts of Paris, it's becoming a battleground. There's been pictures coming out of Paris just this week that showed even police, off-duty police, engaging with nationalists in war against various immigrant communities who have essentially walled off the areas and declared these to be no longer French, but to be part of some nebulous organization inside of Paris itself. So what we see here is that, you know, this Kalergi plan, this Jewish engineered mass immigration into Europe, already Paris is really becoming a battleground. London, although not a battleground, it's been conquered. It does not belong really to the British people anymore. It belongs to essentially an immigrant sect that has come to embody what the Kalergi plan is all about. And mind you, guys, there's a difference between what goes on in Europe and what I see elsewhere as I travel around the world, especially here in the Middle East. You know, you can go into parts of Riyadh, everybody, and you can see areas where there's really no Saudi left, you know. And if I were a Saudi nationalist, I could go out there and I could say, you know, this is proof of ethnic cleansing, and this is proof that our country's being overrun. But the difference, everybody, and this is so critical for you to understand and start to implement in the West, is that, here in Saudi Arabia, nobody is granted the right to vote if you're an immigrant. You are here on one-year visas. It must be renewed every year. If not, you are considered to be illegal. Your telephone lines will be shut down. Your bank accounts will be frozen. You will be found eventually. At least they hope so. The security forces are pretty good here. But the bottom line is that there is no ability for a foreigner to come into Saudi Arabia, to come into Jordan, to come into any of the countries here in the Middle East and be granted the right of franchise. If you come to the Middle East, look, you're brought here because they need labor, they need expertise, but that doesn't grant you the right of franchise or the right to vote and to partake of the civil order in, let's say, Saudi Arabia or Jordan for that matter. And everywhere in the Middle East, you're only granted the ability to stay for 1 year and 1 year only, after which you must renew all of your papers each and every year. And the cost to do that per person runs upwards of $1,000 to $1,400 per year. So imagine if we in the West started to implement these types of immigration strategies. Yeah, you can come, but you get 1 year residency if we grant it to you, and that's going to have to be that you can show us you can take care of yourself, that you're not going to use any government services, that you have a viable income in order to stay. Some way you're going to have to prove to us as the people of the West that you deserve to be here. If you cannot show any of that, well, then sorry, you cannot be granted a year visa. We will not grant you residency to stay that year. And you will be deported if we catch you. That's how it works in the West, in here in the Middle East. And actually, I support it. It keeps these guys and their countries relatively homogenous. It keeps it safe. It keeps a type of pecking order. You know, I guess we in the West, we kind of like this, but we don't see that going on in the West, not in France. So when I hear things like, oh, you know, extremism. The reality of it is these are projections. These are psychopathic politicians projecting their ideologies onto other politicians. You know, being a nationalist is not extreme. Being a nationalist is normal. This is what a politician should be doing. Politicians should not be working for foreign interests. Foreign interests are the domain of the foreign interests, but not for our politicians. You know, for, you know, American politicians, we've already seen time and time again, quite frankly, that American politicians don't really serve American interests. They serve either a nebulous banking global interests or a purely bald face open Jewish interest, and this of course is not right. And theoretically under this democratic process, these types of politicians should be weeded out and gotten rid of. But the more you start to inject this multicultural vision on the country, and you provide these people being brought into the country the right of franchise, you destroy the ability of the initial population to actually defend itself. And that's what we're seeing here in the West, especially in France, as it digresses even further into more and more chaos, especially on the streets of Paris. Now, just like in America, there's been a massive leak of emails. This happened just yesterday. As we all recall, Hillary Clinton's emails were hacked, and a lot of that information was brought out. Well, just yesterday, leading French, again, he's a leading French. See how they post that? It's extremist Marine Le Pen, but leading French presidential candidate. So basically, this banker, nobody who just came out of nowhere, Emmanuel Macron, he is admitting that he was a victim of a target of a massive computer hack. Something like 9 gigabits worth of information was released. This happened, yesterday. Macron, again, he is quote unquote seen as the front runner. And it's funny how words are being used out there. But in a statement, Macron's political movement and March Onwards is what that means, confirmed that it had been hacked. There were initial denials at when this story first broke. The En Marche movement has been, as it says, a victim of a massive and coordinated hack this evening, which has given rise to the diffusion of social media of various internal information, according to the statement. An Interior Ministry official declined to comment, citing French rules that forbid any commentary liable to influence an election, which took effect on midnight on Friday. And what's interesting is that, according to some sources, and I'm not an expert here on French law by any stretch of the imagination, but inside of France, about the only people who are able to provide opinions at the last minute are basically authorized newspapers. So it boils down to a really funny, not funny really, but you got to find some humor in there, kind of a funny little scenario in which Jewish-owned press is able to influence the election up to the last second, but even private citizens, private French people aren't even allowed to be able to comment out there within this 24 to 36 hour window. So it is a bit strange. Now, Macron is somewhat of an enigma. He came out of nowhere. He's what you would certainly call a cuck. He is very pro open border. He's saying basically, hey, vote for me. I'm going to flood your country, you moron. So just give me the vote. He's a member of the Socialist Party, but the truth of the matter is he's never been known to pay dues to that. It was kind of like a cover. He was given like 3 years of credit inside of this Socialist Party. However, he's never really associated with it. He says that now he is an independent. When he announced his bid for the presidency, he formed his own political movement called, again, En Marche, or Onwards, or Forward, and he's described his organization as being post-partisan, combining elements both of the left and the right. Now, mind you, this is an amazing, I don't want to say reality, but it's an amazing development in French politics. You've never had somebody like this formulate their own party and somehow magically come out of nowhere to essentially be a very dominant force in French politics. This is really unheard of within French politics. It's kind of like if you can imagine Ross Perot some years and years and years ago actually able to take the independence and actually make it influential. But at least Perot was somebody that was known. Nobody even knows who this Macron clown really is, other than, you know, he talks about defending our progressive values. Well, what the heck is that? What is a progressive value? What, open borders? Destroy the French nation? Again, these are just open-ended words that say absolutely nothing. He is describing himself as centrist populism as opposed to Marine Le Pen's far right. And actually, that's how the press is reporting it. The press keeps saying that this guy is a centrist, while Marine Le Pen is a far right extremist. So we have, again, the same situation of our media, meaning Western media, being essentially anti-national and pro-global interest. And at some point, quite frankly, guys, I'm of the opinion that these people that are behind all that are going to have to pay the price for the harm that they have done to the nation and to the people of these nations. He's very pro-EU, Macron. Again, he's very, very pro-EU. And what that means is that he has promised to keep everybody together, keep the EU together. This contrasts sharply with Marine Le Pen, who is saying that she will withdraw France, or at least try to get France out of the European Union, just as Britain has done in 2016, although their politicians sure seem to be dragging their feet. Marine Le Pen, for her part, says that the French have been dispossessed of their patriotism, and that was according to something coming out of The Guardian. She continues on saying they are suffering in silence from not being allowed to love their country. The divide is no longer between the left and the right, but between the patriots and the globalists. And that's kind of a message that we heard coming out of Donald Trump. But in France, it's probably even more pronounced because France has a major problem being at the front, really at the front line of this illegal immigrant pipeline smuggling coming in from North Africa. Because if you think about it, these North Africans, they have nothing, okay? They have zero, zip, nothing. So how in the heck could they really cross into Europe anyways if there were not a lot of ships and helpers out there to get them across the Mediterranean? They're not boarding little dinghies and stuff like that for the most part. The vast majority of those coming into France is, again, being smuggled in or openly brought in by funded large ships that are purported to be funded by George Soros. Let's see, Macron is for strengthening the EU's borders, but says France's security policies have unfairly targeted Muslims. Well, again, there's really an issue here where it seems to me and to many others out there that France's security policies have unfairly targeted the native people of France, because they don't have a say in anything that's going on. There's parts of France now that are war zones. There's parts of France that women who are French can't even go into anymore, because why? And it's very true. Guys, I live in the Middle East. Look, if you import the lower third to lower 40, even 50% of the Muslim world into your country, you're not going to have very much freedom from these people. They are not people that you're going to be able to work with. They're not people that you're going to be able to reason with. They're not people that you're going to even to have a social discussion with. These are extremists themselves in many cases. So again, it's going to be a big deal coming up tomorrow in France. It's the Fetch. Good morning, everybody. Again, May 6th, 2017. This is Inside the Eye, live intelligent media for the politically aware. Everybody, welcome back. Good Saturday morning, May the 6th, 2017. And a good Saturday morning to all of you listening in the United States and Canada. And of course, everywhere else out there, hope you're having a great and pleasant Saturday. And of course, if you're catching this on the archives a bit later, thanks for tuning in and giving Inside the Eye Live a listen. We appreciate it. Let's see. This is listener-sponsored and supported radio. What that means, it relies upon your donations to help keep the network alive, up and running. Again, we've been having a great run at the studio. Inside the Eye Live also has been having a great run. We're still currently the number one weekly show here on the network. So we appreciate all of you for supporting that. The numbers have been good for us. I know that you guys joke about how I like these Jew numbers, as you call it, to me in private conversations. But guys, it is the radio business. And although we're not doing this for business per se, nonetheless, it is the radio business. If nobody comes to listen, that would certainly give me a nice excuse to just shut it down and enjoy my Saturdays, which I really haven't been able to do now for 6 years running, if you think about it. My Saturdays have been taken now for 6 years. That's not everybody. That's no joke. But nonetheless, the fact that it is being listened to and the studio supports the efforts and you, the listener, continue to support the efforts, then I'm going to keep doing the show for the foreseeable future anyways. And so, again, but it takes money. It takes effort. We don't have millions of dollars like the Soros people. We're not asking for millions of dollars, quite frankly. But if you can, again, we always appreciate that you send a few of your hard-earned shekels, dinars, francs. They don't have those francs anymore, but euros or whatever you have over, again, just weekly not weekly, monthly. What I would like to just see is just for this show, a nice subscriber base that's just automatic every month. We raise the money. And as they say, finish, it's good, it's over, and we're doing our part. So again, keep that in mind. It's not a lot, $3-$4 a month. But if we had 100 of you doing that, that's $300-$400 a month. Not a big thing out of your pocket for sure. Not at $3 a month, everybody. But it does help a lot when you start to add it all together. So again, keep that in mind. But my show, fortunately, this show, I don't like to say my, because it's really your show too. I got to be careful with my words there. You know, people always say, how come you say we, Fetch? How come you always say we? Who's we? You know, I come from the old school. We don't highlight ourselves. We highlight the group. We highlight the people. And I don't like to just say I, because without you, the audience, and a lot of people behind the scenes, there is no Inside the Eye Live, everybody. So it's not proper. It's not polite. It's not professional to talk about my show, because it's more than that. But anyway, so this show here, it is sponsored though. That's a good thing. And it is sponsored by, as I try to work without a mouse, North Kakalaki Trading Post. Good services and solutions for all things, great and small. It's inconveniently located at the corner of Walk and Don't Walk In by Blackbird Nine's Breakfast Club, a radio show hosted by Blackbird Nine, aka Frederick C. Blackburn. And he is a NSA whistleblower, 9/11 truth advocate, former 32 degree Mason, and a former North Carolina House candidate. And you can hear Blackbird Nine's Breakfast Club every Wednesday evening from 8 to 10 p.m. on Spreaker. That's live. And of course, you can check out BlackbirdNineTradingPost.org to catch some of the archives, which is exactly what I do. And you know, I know Frederick, he's in the chat room. That's why we like to call him our very own. But he is in the chat room. I'll be honest, I don't listen to every show, Frederick, but I did listen to this last show you did. This last show, guys, go give it a listen. That first 40 minutes of that show this past week for BlackbirdNineTradingPost, that was a good show, especially the first 40 minutes. I thought the first 30 to 40 minutes was fantastic. And I'm going to break your slot here to see if I can take this call. And let's see if I got some. I do. Just shut your radio down if you don't mind. Hi, welcome to Inside the Eye Live.
Hello, Fetch.
Hello.
So am I coming through okay? I've got you on speakerphone.
You are absolutely coming through okay. I don't recommend speakerphone, but you're coming through okay.
Yeah, I don't like to put the cell phone right up to my ear.
I know that.
Man, I used to listen to you all the time, and I don't know what happened. It's like I forgot about you for a year or two. But it's good to hear you again. I wanted to share with you and your listeners what I call the secret magic formula in memes and rhetoric. And, oh, by the way, I follow you on Twitter. I'm Habitat for Honkies. I don't know if you remember seeing me.
Yeah. I actually, you get my, you're on my radar screen. How's that? Your tweets are get on my radar screen because, you know, there's lots of tweets that come in, as you know, and not everybody makes it to your screen, but you're one of those guys that I actually do like, oh, that was a good tweet. You know, so
I actually have a T-shirt that says Habitat for Honkies, and I can wear that anywhere. And I never get any slack. People laugh at it, in fact, you know. But anyways, normally, politically, I describe myself as I say I'm a pre-Woodstock patriot, but if you watch TV, you would call me a Nazi. And I respect a lot of the people that, you know, they think we're on the wrong side of World War II and Adolf Hitler and everything, but my emphasis is just get back to what they believed before the 60s. And anyways, the secret formula is the movie Forrest Gump. About in the 2010, I got this obsession with the movie Forrest Gump, and I watched it again. I said, oh, my God, that movie is saying that Forrest Gump is the average white guy. And what the movie is about is the Forrest, Jenny, and Lieutenant Dan, they are the personification of white America going through the cultural transformation of the 1960s. And Lieutenant Dan was mad as hell at the winds of change. He was raging against the winds of change, and he was what Obama would call a bitter clinger. And Forrest and Jenny are white America that came out of the Cultural Revolution of the 60s. Jenny, she was always gone, and when she shows up, she drops dead of sexually transmitted diseases because she represented the feminist movement. And she was the death of the traditional woman, the mother. And the movie is about being pushed around like a feather in the wind and having no moral compass at all, and how they can just be molded, and how white America just adopted a whole new set of value systems and everything. And the point of the movie is who Forrest Gump and Jenny are. Forrest is an obedient white boy, and he represents the average white guy. And Jenny is a man-hating slut, and she represents women who are liberated because of the feminist movement and free from the oppression of the male patriarchal dominant society. So anyway, I have three pejoratives, three mean calling, because, you know, it's really, I think, mock and ridicule is the best. So you got a gumper, and you got a son of a gumper, and then you've got gumping out. And, for example, the problem with Alex Jones, he's the son of a gumper. His old man fed him this 60s stuff about their parents were racist. And so his dad taught him that. If you recall at the end of the movie, little Forrest got on the brainwashing bus, and it was his turn to get brainwashed, you know. But that's the problem with someone like Alex Jones. He is a son of a gumper, and he has adopted multicultural America. That's one of the value systems of the Forrest Gump generation. Are you still with me?
Yeah, go ahead.
Hello?
I'm just listening away, man. So, you got a great line going.
Yeah, okay. I thought maybe you hung up. But anyways, yeah, if you recall, at the very end of the movie, the saddest point of the movie is when Lieutenant Dan shows up at the wedding, and he can finally see Forrest eye to eye. Well, if you'll notice, he's married to a Korean woman, and 20 years earlier, he would have been bombing them and calling them gooks. And what had happened is Lieutenant Dan gumped out. That's what you call gumping out. He went with the flow, and he adopted the new definition of America. Instead of the United States, he adopted the new multicultural America. So Lieutenant Dan gumped out. And in steam rooms, everything, with all races and everything, someone will say, bring up the word racist, and I go, well, that's a verbiage that the Forrest Gump generation brings up, racist. I'm not sure what you mean about it. I know the Gumpers, to them, they're saying that their parents were racist. Nowadays, I think racist just means that you hate white people because it's only applied to white people. Or another thing that the Gumpers say, and I talk this way, to the Forrest Gump generation, World War II is all about Nazis and Jews. But if you talk to World War II vets, they didn't know anything about the Jewish issue, and they didn't fight the Nazis. They fought the Axis powers. I'll give you another example of Gumper talk, that Nazis are racist. That's Gumper talk, because World War II vets fought against the Axis powers, the most racially diverse military alliance the world has ever seen. And you just bring that point up to people that say Nazis are racist, say, my God, that's Forrest Gump generation talk. Because how can you say they're racist? They're allies with half the world, the most racially diverse alliance ever. So you can just hear these people talking about the value system and how they gumped out and went along with the flow like a feather in the wind and adopted all these value systems. Multiculturalism, that's a Forrest Gump generation value system. One thing I remember the last time I called, I had a list of Forrest Gump generation values. And the reason I did the list is because the narrative, they were changing the narrative from, they were starting to say that the United States has always been a nation of immigrants and diversity has always been our American values. Well, that's a lie. And yeah, so here's the list.
Come on, it's 91% European, and it was always you must be European to come in.
Yeah, and to remind people, I'm just gumping out and going with the flow on the new narrative. No, Don't you remember they were telling them that their parents are racist, sexist, bigoted, xenophobic, homophobic, backwards-minded, mean-spirited, prejudicial, discriminatory, intolerant, extremist, neo-Nazi, redneck, Archie Bunker, dingbat, southern-like, oppressive, narrow-minded, male chauvinist, pig, white supremacist, anti-Semitic, misogynistic, flag-waving yahoos, green apes, KKK hicks. And now you're telling me that they were multicultural. I mean, it's just they're gumping out. They're going with the flow. They have no moral compass. That list, I memorized that list is because the new narrative started coming out. We've always been about diversity, and I was just like amazed. I'm looking around at all these pathetic white people going with the flow, and I'm going, no, come on. But anyways, I love the movie Forrest Gump. I make fun of all the multiculturalists and everything by calling them Gumpers. And before I hang up, just real quickly, there's just three quickly names. You got Gumper, a son of a Gumper, and then you got Gumping Out. And I love it. It works really good with me. I can talk, white nationalism in a mixed crowd amongst all ages, all races, not get anybody mad. They all kind of laugh. Making fun of white America is what I'm doing. So what do you think?
Well, that was a pretty good short section. You ought to get your own show with that type of stuff.
I thought about it, keep me out of the bars, give me something to do at night. But people get a kick out of it. Just last week, I was having a beer with this younger couple, and they were loving it. I was talking about, the movie Forrest Gump and the value system and what it was about, and they were just getting a kick out of it. But it just blows my mind how I can sit there in a bar or a steam room with people of all races talking about white nationalism in context of the movie Forrest Gump, and nobody gets upset. It just works really good.
Yeah. Nice deflection point, just so that you're not like making it hardcore, you make it palatable to the environment, and that's a very key point here, is to make things palatable.
Yeah. So. And plus, mock and ridicule. I think that is more effective to make fun of people that you disagree with than it is to try to convince them. And so when you call, and you just,
you talk about how you're dealing with you're talking about this multiculturalism and white nationalism within a multicultural environment. And I don't know about what you found, but what I'm finding is that a lot of Chinese, a lot of other different ethnicities, they are actually supporting the white side of it more than the white side are supporting them, because they see the problems coming down the road. They came to live in a country that was largely white because of our ideals, our practices, our ethics, etc. And they supported that, and now they almost look as if you guys are just giving up your country for nothing.
Yeah, I know. I've often said the only people that hate white people are Jews and the Forrest Gump generation. It seems like the Asians like us, everybody likes us, but the Forrest Gump generation, they think it's Nazism and racism to try to protect your heritage. I've often noticed that, yeah. But anyways, I thought there's a Frank from North Carolina. I thought I've listened to him for some reason. It seems like him and I listen to the exact same radio shows at the exact same time, and I'm sure he's listening. And I thought he would enjoy the movie Forrest Gump, and the next time he's out there, he can just start calling people Gumpers. So I'm going to let you go, Fetch, and get back down and listen to you and have a cup of coffee. You have a good day, okay?
All right. Thanks for the call. That's Habitat for Honkies on Twitter. Again, it's the Fetch Inside the Eye Live. We had the cat report interrupted. The cat report, again, it is sponsored again by North Cackalacky Trading Post. The cat report this week is fairly simple. We've got the cats back home. I miss them. I miss my cats. They're like my kids now. And One Eye, he's my big guy. He likes to go out every day now. He basically goes out. He like looks at the front door. I've watched him on video through the Skype here. He likes to look at the front door. He looks up at you and he says, "Why are you not letting me out?" And then you let him out. He goes down the stairs and he's got to go under a car and he watches for cars because he's got to cross the street. He goes into this empty lot across the way. And he will camp out, and about an hour, 2 to 3 hours later, he comes back. But last time he came back, a couple of days ago, he brought the same cat that bit my girlfriend. I don't know if you guys remember the story, but she was in the hospital last year this time, or just got out of the hospital because of a cat bite. Became some type of virus that attacked the brain and basically almost killed her. And it's actually the nephew of One Eye. And this week, One Eye brought that cat back. And it's like One Eye's like brings this cat back, which I don't like. It's a dangerous cat. And he's like looking at this cat saying, come on, man, the house is cool. Let's go. Come on in. Come on in. And the girls at home are saying, no, One Eye, he can't come in the house. And One Eye's like not wanting to come in until this cat came into the house. It's like, no, I don't let that cat in the house. It's a very dirty, dangerous cat. It's more feral than it is tame. And I'm a good-hearted guy, but I'm just not going to deal with that. In fact, I've got some like old mortadello here. If you guys know mortadello, it's like the Middle East bologna, but it's a lot better quality and a lot more tasty. It's a lot tastier. I sound like I'm speaking from the Middle East now. It's a lot tastier. And I need to cut it up because we got a kitten, a couple kittens outside that are probably about 6-7 months old. And I'm going to go feed some cats tonight. But everything, Bruiser got a bath. Bruiser looks fabulous. He's got a beautiful coat. It's nice and soft. He got a big bath this week, and he loves his bath now, quite frankly. And then, of course, we've got some nice pictures. Leo was sent from Valentine again. Leo's camping out literally inside of a bathroom sink, just kind of chilling. And I've seen that, of course, but that's kind of cool. But, guys, that's the Cat Report. It's brought to you again by North Kakalaki Trading Post. Good services and solutions for all creatures, great and small. Inconveniently located at the corner of Walk and Don't Walk, and by Blackbird Nine's Breakfast Club, a radio show hosted by Blackbird Nine, a.k.a. Frederick C. Blackburn. And you can catch his show once again every Wednesday evening from 8 to 10 p.m. on Spreaker. And for more information, visit BlackbirdNineTradingPost.org. That's BlackbirdNineTradingPost.org. And I really recommend you check out this last show, at least the first 40 minutes. It was exceptionally well done, quite frankly. So go check that show out. What else? Last week we were talking about our archiver. He goes by the name of Zapopper7 on the internet. And he is actually the official archiver of Inside the Eye Live. What that means as an official archiver is he records it, he edits it, he archives it into the archive sites that I've set up, and he posts it on grism.blogspot.com along with quite a lot of other shows that he does over there. But he has access, honestly, to my passwords and everything he needs to do his job. He is the official archiver, and he ran into a tough spot. He was asking for donations, and he raised a decent amount, like $600 Canadian dollars last week. And I said, no, leave it up. I want to do a commercial, I want to appeal on your behalf. And we did that last week, and he ended up raising over $1,000 Canadian dollars. So he just wanted to send out a shout out and a thank you to everybody out there that donated and supported the efforts. And if you did so because of this show, fantastic. He's going to be keeping now a donation button up over there, a tip jar for the future. But for now, thanks. He says thank you to everybody. Got him out of a jam. And I told him, now use some of that money and restock your pantry so you're not just sitting there with nothing, with no money. And hopefully now with everything settled and in good order, he's going to be able to get back to just doing what he loves to do, really, which is, I guess, archiving shows. He's very good at it. He's got a lot of great mix over there. And, you know, he and I, we go way back, quite frankly. He was posting my shows over at consen.org. He was torrenting my shows way, 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 way back. And so he and I go way back. At least he goes back to following my work. And a lot of stories we could tell, but we won't do those on air. So once again, Zapopper at Grism says thank you very much for all the support last week. It's The Fetch, Hour 2, coming right up. Inside the Eye Live, intelligent media for the politically aware. We'll be right back. And welcome back, everybody. It's the Fetch Inside the Eye Live, intelligent media for the politically aware. Coming to you live from Riyadh, the capital of Saudi Arabia. Today's date again, May the 6th, 2017. Local time, 6:03 in the evening. And it's hot. It's been about 103 degrees today, all day today. At least it feels like all day today. I went out about, like 1 o'clock, something like that, to get the drink, to buy some drinks and some bread. I was out of bread and milk for my coffee and things like that. And it was hot, to say the least. And now, because the show's going on, I've turned the air conditioners off because I don't think it's a great production feel to have air conditioners blowing in your ear while I'm doing a show. So yeah, the air conditioners are turned off. I'm kind of like in a tank top right now, sweating away. So that kind of sets the scene for you. And but nonetheless, guys, welcome. It's a fun day, fun Saturday. We had a great call coming in from Habitat for Honky or something like that. He follows me on Twitter. I think I follow him also. Got a lot of good tweets out there. You can follow me on Twitter, by the way, inside at Radio ITEL. That's right. Follow me on Twitter at Radio ITEL. If you are online, it seems like I don't have like a big online presence. It seems like I maybe a little bit more seasoned. Seasoned. That's a nice way to put it. Generation. But nonetheless, we are sitting now at 988 followers. I just need 12 more, guys. I'm not begging, but I just need 12 more to get to 1,000. And I really thought I was going to hit 1,000 very fast. But, you know, after the election, or just as the run-up to the election came along, it seems like Twitter did something because my numbers just completely fell off. A lot of people were like getting deleted. So I've got a great Twitter audience, quite frankly, the lively audience. I appreciate, you know, the support they give. But nonetheless, follow me on Twitter at Radio ITEL. That's right, Twitter at Radio ITEL. Chat room still open, obviously. It's always humming. People comment what a nice chat room we have. And it's a nice chat room because we have a lot of nice people there. And for the most part, it's pretty calm. It gets a little bit cantankerous from time to time. No, I hope I didn't say May. Did I say May 6th, 5th again? It's May 6th, everybody. May 6th. I don't know why I've got May 5th in my head. Let's see. It's May 6th. May 6th. My computer says May 6th, not the 5th. What else, guys? We were talking about Macron and the French election. I'm going to wrap this thing up a little bit, and then we're going to move on to other stories about the Middle East and such. But Macron is essentially a Rothschild choice. Macron is somebody that, I mean, I don't know about this guy. I mean, I don't have anything about dating or marrying older people, but the guy dated his math teacher, his high school math teacher. He married his high school math teacher, and she's something like 20 years his senior. A guy named Jacques Attali, he's a philosopher, a globalist. What's the story on this guy? It seems to be an associate of Macron. Let's leave that because I haven't read the story enough to comment. But basically, you've got a lot of... Where's that story, man? Where did it go? I had everything set up. It's tough when you don't have a mouse. All right, I don't see it. Seems like I must have closed the window. But nonetheless, you've got the hacking going on. You're going to see a lot more. Here's the story. Macron is saying that he's going to make France more business friendly, which means he's going to give everything away to the banks. And he wants to increase defense spending here's an interesting thing coming out of Europe that I've noticed. You have two candidates, Macron and Theresa May in the UK. And Macron says he's in favor of, quote unquote, intervening in Syria. And Theresa May, who's running for the election in the UK, which is coming up, I think, this month also. Don't quote me on that because I'm not following the story all that much, but I believe it's this month. She said that if she's elected, she will take to the House of Commons and request a vote to bomb Syria. And I'm like, man, these politicians, they just don't get it. Every single one of these politicians are essentially Jewish or slash, if you want to be polite, Israeli agents. literally. So you've got Macron. He wants to intervene in Syria. Then you've got Theresa May saying that she wants to bomb Syria. I'm like, where do we get these morons to be politicians? And of course, we get them because they're bought and paid for, not by us. We don't have the money, quite frankly, to put them into power. We only have our time and ingenuity and effort to put people into power. But these guys, it's like, you know, you can't get away from their ability to want to intervene on behalf of Israel and this Jewish project. And Haaretz, which is the leftist-leaning newspaper out of Israel, they even came out with an article, and I don't have it in front of me, but something to the effect that when will America or when will Jews not, or when will Israel or Jews not control American foreign policy? And that was literally right inside of Israel. They're basically staying straight up. Look, we Israelis control America's foreign policy. And it's not even a secret to the world out there. People get it. I mean, they really, really get it. Now, you have Trump is going to be coming to the Middle East. I'm looking to find out what's going on from my sources here. I do have some sources that I can talk to, and I'm looking to see what's going on with that. But he's like coming here to Israel. That's going to be one of his first stops. It's not going to be, I don't believe it's going to be Saudi Arabia, but he's going to come to Saudi Arabia. He's trying to push through, he being Trump, is trying to push through something like $10.5 billion worth of arms for the Saudi government. Personally, I don't care about that. That's sales. It's money. I personally don't care, honestly. I don't care, guys. But the issue I do care about is that our American Congress has a legal obligation. Notice they are, by law, forced to concede or to consider that the state of Israel, this criminal operation, must maintain a qualitative edge when it comes to any sales in the Middle East. And I'm like, you know, why are we Americans creating a situation to where the interests of Israel come over the interests of the United States? Because if you think about it, if our sales, meaning American sales to the Middle East, are predicated on us having to provide to Israel first a qualitative edge, what that tells us is we cannot look out for our own American interests without first taking into account Israeli interests, which then means that Israeli interests trump American interests. Never mind the pun called Trump. At some point, this really does have to stop. America cannot be great if we use Jews and Israel as our measuring point as to what is and is not great. And a lot of people say, you know, these Jews, they have so much power. And yeah, they have a lot of power. But, you know, never mind for now. Never mind that story for now. Okay, so basically, Trump is planning to go visit Israel. One of the places he's going to go is called the Masada. Masada is a site in Israel. It's an ancient fortress situated atop a 400 meter or 1,300 foot high rock cliff. And he wants to give an address there at the Masada. This is the place where Jews decided to commit suicide rather than surrender to the Romans. And then, like, you know, at some point in time, you know, this Jewish mentality of committing suicide rather than surrender, it's unfortunate, but this mentality, which seems to be hardwired into the Jewish mythology, Jewish ethos, they have the same attitude towards the West and the world at large. They want to tell us that, gee, you know, if we can't get our way, we will just take the whole world down with us, just like we did when we refused to surrender to the Romans at the siege, 2,000 years ago. Of course, Trump is going to have to go visit the Yad Vashem Holocaust Museum. He's going to go to the Western Wall and Mount Herzl in Jerusalem. He's also going to be visiting with Mahmoud Abbas. At least this is all rumored. He's expected to arrive here on May the 22nd. And the date coincides with the 50th anniversary of what Jews call the reunification of Jerusalem following the 1967 Six-Day War. And that is going to be commemorated in Israel beginning on the evening of May 23rd and on May 24th. The White House Press Secretary Office has said in a statement this past Thursday that the trip will, quote-unquote, further strengthen the United States-Israeli partnership, as if, gee, it needs to be strengthened any further. They actually control the United States. And that Trump will meet with Israeli leaders, including Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, to discuss the prospect of advancing, quote-unquote, a genuine and lasting peace between the Israelis and Palestinians, as well as other regional issues, including, quote-unquote, threats posed by Iran and its proxies and by ISIS and other terrorist groups. Well, when we look at that statement in total, quite frankly, ISIS, as they call it, or Daesh, is essentially a Jewish-run proxy, backed by, of course, various regional players. I won't be denying that. That may include the Saudis. However, it is a Jewish operation first. It's part of the Yanan plan, or the depopulation of the Middle East, so that Israel can go get its Lebensraum, or, Lebensraum, just call it Greater Israel, really, the Greater Israel Project. And so basically this idea of advancing a genuine and lasting peace between the Israelis and Palestinians, that's an affront BS line to all of us. The Israeli people and the Jewish people, they're not interested in peace. The only peace they recognize is an absolute capitulation and essentially destruction of all Palestinian society. So basically, if you are for allowing this criminal syndicate to come in and destroy a people entirely, and I'm not saying that the Palestinians are the nicest of people at this stage either, but nonetheless, if you are for allowing Israel to come in and destroy Palestine, well, the way they're going to do that is they're going to do perpetual war in the Middle East. They're going to depopulate that part of the world. They're going to dump all of the stuff that survives onto you, whether it's going to be America, Canada, Germany, France, Sweden, the UK, Denmark, whatever, and you're going to be stuck dealing with the fallout. So at some point, you might as well fight the Israelis in Palestine rather than have to fight the outcome of their decisions or their efforts on your own home front. And that's what a lot of people don't seem to understand here. I don't understand it, but they don't seem to get it. Look, if you don't deal with Israel on the terms inside of Israel, then you're going to have to deal with the fallout in your own countries, because the whole plan of the Israeli people and the Jewish people inside the West, because they're agents of Israel for the most part, is the depopulation of parts of the Middle East and the destruction of Western civilization. And it's hard for you to believe, at least a lot of people out there, it's really hard for people to believe that Jews are like this demonic, this diabolical, this obsessive about destroying the Western world. But understand, like, when Israel was founded, you know, they went to the Arch of Titus, which was a commemoration built by Rome for the destruction of Israel and the Jewish people back in the 2,000 years ago, and they actually walked through that darn Arch of Titus backwards to symbolize the fact that they are now returning after 2,000 years of exile. So they, whether you believe it or not, man, it don't matter. These guys absolutely believe it, and you got to deal with reality as reality hits you. Now, it's rumored that Trump is going to be bringing over 1,000. Wow, if you can imagine that, over 1,000 people with him to Israel. So if you can imagine the power Jewish people have to arrange for 1,000 people to come with Donald Trump to visit Israel. And what's very interesting about this whole maneuver is that traditionally, the U.S., a standing or new U.S. president always visited Canada or Mexico first, and ours, our direct neighbors. And that is being shelved this year. We are not going to be visiting Canada first. The U.S. president will not be visiting Mexico. He's going to be visiting Israel. And isn't that a wonderful development? Yes, indeed it is. All right. You know, there's a story a while ago. You know, what we see going on in the West a lot, and it's something we've talked about, and actually Blackbird 9, on Blackbird 9's trading post, he did actually a very good show about this to start this past Wednesday, and I'm not really wanting to necessarily follow up, but it's just an important story, so I think we should just hit it again. And that is this idea of this destruction of Western symbols inside of the West. And what Talmudic war teaches its adherents, and that would be, of course, the Jewish people, is this idea of complete destruction of their enemies. Destroy their temples, destroy their symbols, destroy their people, let no man, woman, or child live. Absolutely destroy all the history of the people. And we've seen that at play for a long time here. And every time that you hear of a Jewish group out there saying, you know, I don't know if you recall the story of this rocket scientist. I mean, literally a rocket scientist. He contributed heavily to the U.S. space program. And mind you, I don't have his name, but I was thinking about this as I was kind of like thinking what to talk about today. And, you know, What the Jewish people engineered here in America, as if I'm in America, right? But yeah, what they engineered is the removal of this guy from like the history books of the American space program, because quote unquote he was a Nazi. And this layer of vindictive viciousness—it's not just vindictive, but it's like sadistic viciousness on behalf of the Jewish people. It's hardwired via Talmud into their actions. And you see it now in play. You see, people weren't paying attention to it. And I'm going to have a twist on this as this, we develop this story. So pay attention. You have a twist. And I'll just leave the twist for now, but I'm going to bring a twist. In New Orleans, for instance, we see that the government is trying to take down monuments. We see the flag, the Confederate flag, taken down. We see attacks on Thomas Jefferson. Well, it wasn't very well reported. And let me see if I can pull this story up. I had to reboot everything before the show. But in Pennsylvania, back in December, students in the English department removed the portrait of Shakespeare from its prominent place within this English hall, quote unquote, in the name of inclusivity. What the heck does that mean? But you have a guy here, Shakespeare. You know, I take you back. I went into Los Angeles. I love the Los Angeles Public Library downtown. It's one of the better repositories in America, quite frankly. It's rich in its Masonic books going back into the 30s, 20s, 1800s. And back when we didn't have computers, it was important, if you wanted to really get some research done, was to get yourself to a good library, because you're limited, obviously, by the books that you would have access to. And the LA Public Library was a phenomenal, and I'm sure it still is, a phenomenal repository of knowledge. Some of it is lame, you know, like you go down into the, you know, four flights down, and you go into the history section, and it's a massive floor just on history. And you go, and there's a big table, and I don't know, it's like maybe 24 inches wide, 2 feet wide, maybe 18 inches wide, and maybe, I don't know, 20 feet long. And there was this long rollout of human history. And it starts with Adam and Eve, and it goes on up to the modern history. And that was like prominently displayed. But you go up to the first floor, and there was this section there about history of English. And the first thing you go see there is a Bible. And I'm like, you know, the Bible should not be here. This is an abomination on, or a blight on our language, our English language. And I know that to those in the Christian world, that might be a little bit heretical, but this is a Jewish book. What's it got to do with English? What has to do with English is Shakespeare. Shakespeare and the people behind Shakespeare, they're the ones that are really behind English, everybody, as a peer-constructed language. Shakespeare's accomplishment are something like seven. And, of course, it's his accomplishments. It's let me backtrack a little bit. Shakespeare's accomplishments are something like 1,700 words or more created by this guy. That's what's attributed to him. And yet, of course, then you got other places saying, well, it really wasn't that much, but that's how much was actually attributed to him. Some words, for instance, let me see if I can pull this up. Arouse, beached, barefaced, discontent, equivocal, fashionable, fixture, gossip, rant. You guys like the word rant. You talk a lot about you love rants. Well, the word rant is attributed to Shakespeare. He said that he created something like 1,700 words. And there's more going on here, in my opinion. And this has to deal somewhat with what's going on now in the West. See, the West was like the last vestige of these old ancient Osirian mystery systems. And what they did in the West is they encoded and hid a lot of information into the Gothic cathedrals. Perhaps you could even say into some of the legal systems. And by the time the 17, 1800s, 1600s came around, the people who were preserving this knowledge were preserving it into the language itself, into the alphabet, into the language, into the words that were being created. There has been this tyrannical system of war that goes around and destroys knowledge for thousands and thousands and thousands of years. And the fascinating part right now is if you slow down and pay attention, we're living that war today. These leftist radicals, these George Soros-funded operations, what really are they all about? They're about destroying every hint of our history, every hint of our knowledge. And I was thinking today, you know, all right, this is probably what our ancestors had to experience some 400, 500 years ago, when they were trying to build the West, but they had this tyrannical church that was trying to destroy everything and everything that got in the way. And we're kind of going through the same process again, but it's taken on its modern flair, its modern flavor. But we're experiencing it. We're watching it. And then we have to decide, what do we do? Do we stand and do we fight? Do we stand and preserve? Do we have to take some strategic decision? And this is something I was thinking about today, to start to withhold our knowledge. See, we in the West have an immense amount of knowledge on the esoteric world, or about the esoteric world, about philosophy, about reason, about logic. Do we start to withdraw information and leave these dark minions to essentially start feeding upon themselves? Have we reached a point? I'm just asking this rhetorically now. Have we reached a point in time where some of our knowledge should be voluntarily retracted? not because we're afraid, but because why should we leave our genius to what they would have said in the ancient days to swine? I think this is a serious question at this stage. What do we pull back and preserve rather than allow these morons and these monkeys and these clueless, literally animals, to come around and destroy? Can you imagine something that's been over 100 years or so, like a portrait of Shakespeare, simply being torn down by a bunch of idiotic students at a campus? More on this, guys. It's The Fetch, Inside the Eye, live. Intelligent media for the politically aware. Back with more right after this. Welcome back, everyone. It's The Fetch, Inside the Eye, live, intelligent media for the politically aware, right here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. Today's date is May the 6th, 2017. And again, a good Saturday morning to all of you listening. And if you're catching it on the archives, good afternoon. Join us in the chat room, insidetheeyelive.com. That's right, insidetheeyelive.com. Good crowd, as always, it seems, is already inside there. I'm trying to find... Where's my chat room? There's my chat. Yeah, good crowd already, guys. Actually, it's been there a while, but join us there. Cat Carson, Road Dogging Snips, 1776 Blues are what I see on the screen at the moment, but I know Frederick Blackbird 9's been there, and Optics 1 and a few others are there. So again, join us in the chat room where, again, it's a nice place to hang out while you take in the show, for sure. It's a great interactive platform for people listening to the show. And we're talking about this destruction, this replacing of monuments, and this agenda darkness, this dark agenda that we see enveloping the Western world. You know, we've been talking about this for years and years and years, but more on a Kabbalistic sense than we were on a political sense. They kind of digress or diverge, I should say. Do they diverge or converge? They both converge, not diverge, they converge. Essentially, the politics and the Kabbalah all converge at some point. You may not believe anything I say, and that doesn't matter, quite frankly. I'm okay with that. But it might behoove you to understand a little bit that those who do believe what I do talk about are people in power, people in media, people inside of Hollywood, and I'm not talking about everybody, that's for sure. Not everybody is, because quite frankly, what I do is of a reasonably complicated level, but at a senior level, at a very high level, people understand what I'm doing. And that is these Kabbalistic instructions. And so when I look on out there and I see what's going on in the destruction of civilization and the destruction of the West, what I'm really seeing is a Talmudic war against the West. Straight up, it's a Talmudic war against the West. And the anger, and one of the theories I have, by the way, and this may or may not be true, but generally it's pretty accurate, generally, is within the West, we have within our philosophy, which you could call Christianity if you'd like, within the Freemasonic systems, within the architecture, within the language, we find a philosophy that is counter to Jewish ideology. You know, one of the greatest magicians of the West, in fact, he was considered the grandfather of Western magic. The guy's name was Cornelius Agrippa, I believe, going back to the 1500s. And he talked about this Kabbalah of the Jews, you know, this Kabbalah of the Jews. And essentially what it is these Jews mix and match numbers and they destroy the secret name and the sacred name of God. And they basically know what the hell they're doing. But as we developed these Western esoteric traditions, and they got morphed into Rosicrucianism, Freemasonry. I'm trying to think of some of these others out there. The OTO, which would come later, Thelema. This knowledge was further embedded into the language, into the culture, into the architecture. Now, this knowledge that we're talking about is essentially transcendental. It kind of goes beyond just the physical plane. There's something that allows you to kind of connect with the larger universe out there. And to give you an idea, where did it go? Not that one. Maybe this window. Yes, here it is. To give you an idea of kind of the philosophy or thinking that was going into this, there was a book published by Tennyson going back in the 1600s of Sir Francis Bacon's work. And Sir Francis Bacon wrote a small little treatise. It was published in a book called Baconia by Thomas Tennyson in 1669. And it was called The Alphabet of Nature. And one of the things they said here is he said, neither are we ignorant that those inquisitions, I hope I brought the right one, are sometimes mutually entangled, so that some things of which we inquire, even the same things, belong to several titles. And he goes on, he says, this is the form and rule of our alphabet. And what they're really saying is that within the alphabet, there's all kinds of patterns, there's philosophies, there's inquisitions, there's philosophy. And all of this is embedded into our language. And it's highly complex. But those who are at a higher level, at a higher power, they really understand the genius that is within the English alphabet. They understand the genius that is within the philosophy encoded into the English alphabet. And they have sought to build this new Jerusalem, as was the song made popular by really Emerson, Lake, and Palmer to my generation, Jerusalem. You know, till we have built Jerusalem in these green and promised lands. In other words, there's always been a strategic direction or a strategic initiative to take over the English language. It's a language that is, some as physicists say, is, I think, fourth generation or 4G language or something to that effect. In ours, it's a scientific mathematical language that really is capable of raising people up. And Bacon talked about that when he said, may God, the creator, preserver, and renewer of the universe, protect and govern this work. He's talking about the alphabet, both in its ascent to its glory and its descent to the good of mankind, for the sake of his mercy and goodwill to men, etc. In other words, there was a great work put into effect within our alphabet to raise mankind up. And an issue I have with those who are virulently anti-Masonic is they don't seem to grasp that the conditions that necessitated the rise of Freemasonic and other esoteric traditions are not unlike what we have today. Imagine you, if we have particular knowledge and we want to go out and raise this knowledge publicly, like, for instance, we know for a fact that Treblinka was never the site of the death of 900,000 Jews. And we know for a fact that there was never any vast pits in Treblinka. And 45 Jews really didn't dig up 900,000 bodies and burn them all with railroad ties. But imagine you have even greater information than that, and yet you're confronted by a force that seeks to completely destroy not just the information, but you along with it. See, we have these circumstances now where it behooves us to begin the process, or at least rationally consider the process, to begin to pull back, but at the same time communicate privately and internally. In other words, we're working in a situation now where everything is completely open source. We throw our information out. We allow people to gather this information. But at the same time, we're opening ourselves up to certain ridicule, which is okay to me, certain repercussions, which is okay to me, certain tribulations, which are, again, okay to me. But they may not be okay to everybody involved. At some point, look, you can't do it all by yourself. You can't create a society. You can't create a civilization by yourself. There, at some point, logically, you know, going to have to be groups of people that come together, groups of people that work together, groups of people that plan together. It's time to now consider, in my opinion, the withdrawal of knowledge from certain people. And I've always been opposed to this, quite frankly. But, you know, when I see things like students taking down Shakespeare in a museum, not a museum, but in an English program, actually an English facility, at a super trusted and respected program like Penn State. Actually, having seen that now, I'm glad USC kicked the heck out of them at the Rose Bowl. But when I see this going on, and in its place, they put a black lesbian LGBT freak. The absurdity of these students just, it defies common sense. What are these students thinking? You know, you can get, as a student, you can get all the crap of your public modern culture everywhere you look. But you know, those of us who entrusted the past to us, and those of us who are now a little bit older today and have a responsibility also to entrust some of the past to our future generations, you know, ideas of a Shakespeare and others also out there, of course, this is all done so that our next generation, our current younger generation, can have a link to its past. Talmudic warfare is done in such a way as to sever that link, to create a situation where the people are afloat, rudderless on a sea of chaos, from which, as you can imagine, the sharks that come up from the depth are easily able to come up and feed on all of this floating chafe, basically, that's struggling on the surface of the water. Why should we grant to any of these students knowledge when they are so stupid that they are going to buy into this Jewish moral morass? At some point, there needs to be infiltration. There needs to be intelligence coming from within these networks. We need to find our new people. And they're out there, folks. They're all over the place. I'm not saying it's not even impossible, because they are. If you go to New Orleans today, tomorrow, you'll see a group of very young, dedicated people out there protecting some of the monuments, that the same energy, the same life essence that took out the Shakespeare portrait at the University of Penn State are trying to do to the city of New Orleans. Knowledge needs, as we may have reached a point, again, where knowledge can benefit through some type of secret transmission. Does that mean it's got to be a Freemason movement? No. But the point to remember is that we are living again in a period where it becomes somewhat necessary to consider this. And you know what? If you go back 400 years, it was absolutely paramount that it be considered, because the draconian ways in which the governments of those days were able to operate necessitated these secret systems of information, knowledge, transfer. Now we see on campus a situation, and it's not just the campuses. It's pretty much life in general in America and in the West, where a lesbian, black, gay, feminist, doesn't recognize genitals, gender neutral. This type of clown with zero historical work to her credit is elevated above something like a bard of a Shakespeare, which is probably an entire movement of people that used the name Shakespeare as a means to present itself to the world. Imagine these students are so stupid, so ignorant, so clueless that they would forsake some of the most important knowledge granted to the West in favor of a moron, gay, black, lesbian idiot, whose works are essentially nothing more than a bunch of whining about how her people have been suffering so much, and yet she's so stupid she can't even find the Jewish part of the equation. And have you noticed that as you go around and about your daily work out there? Have you ever noticed that everything gets a black eye? The Russians might get a black eye. The Nazis get a black eye. The white nationalists get a black eye. Every group, it seems, out there gets some type of black eye. But you ever notice that nobody's talking about, at least at the larger social structures, they're just not talking about this Jewish equation. They ignore it. Or do they simply just want to deflect? At some point, and it's improved a lot over the years, and it's improving still today, but nationalists have to deal on a national level and a local level and even international levels about this thing called this Jewish problem. Do we really think that a bunch of idiotic students in Penn State are intelligent enough to find such a dichotomy of symbols such that they will replace a Shakespeare portrait with something like completely 180 degrees inverse, some black lesbian moron that died a few years ago and has nothing to her name, basically? The money, you know, I was looking at a sad story coming out of Venezuela. And, of course, it's coming from the media, which is kind of like fake news. And it showed a man, older man, basically reduced to a skeleton, trying to get some help because he's starving because the state of the Venezuelan economy is so bad. Every country in the world, if they want, can pick themselves out of these problems, at least on a local level, by simply issuing their own currencies, by creating their own economies internally. Can you imagine a country as rich and as prosperous as Venezuela, which essentially has been a colony of the United States because the United States takes a vast majority of its oil and gas? How can they not grow anything in their country? Why is it that they have no means of internal production in their country? Now, America, to its credit, we've always been a mercantile nation. We've always been able to make things. We've always been able to build things. We've always been able to grow things. America is really blessed with some fantastic natural resources. And the people traditionally have been equally as creative to use those resources. But the process seems to be the same everywhere we see the death of nations. Destroy the natural resources, destroy the ability to make or grow things within your own country, implode the economy, destroy its banking system, and leave the people destitute. This is the story of Venezuela. It was the story of Soviet Russia. It was the story of Ukraine. I think what Americans and the West, if they haven't figured it out yet, is, guys, you're at war. And you're at war with a Talmudic enemy that has no remorse. It has no feelings. It has no compassion. It cares absolutely nothing. It is really the heart of evil. I mean, you have a unique opportunity today because we are watching in real time, thanks to the internet and technology like the cameras we have, even on our phones. You know, we can transmit data across the world instantaneously. Every time you see a group out there seeking to destroy information, to destroy a symbol, to destroy some type of cultural value, cultural monument, you should see the Talmud. You should see the local rabbi. You should see the Maoists, the Bolsheviks. Everywhere you look, that's what you should be looking at. That's what you should be seeing. We should start to equate all of this destruction of the West directly onto the shoulders of our Jewish population. And I've, you know, I'm running out of time here. So I'll clarify that even further so those of you who think I'm being unfair. In the next hour, it's The Fetch. Inside the Eye Live, intelligent media for the politically aware. And welcome back, everybody. It's The Fetch, Inside the Eye, live, intelligent media for the politically aware, right here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. Join us in the chat room, insidetheeyelive.com. Click on the live chat button. That gets you in the door. Love to have you there. It's a great place to interact with the show. And, of course, if you'd like to call in, the phone lines are open, 1-347-688-2902. That's 1-347-688-2902. I saw a stat a while ago, and it had to do with Jewish charity in America. And, of course, charity is what it is. Charity is essentially done through nonprofits in America. What that means is you can donate to a nonprofit, and you can deduct the money that you donated to to these charities, and then you do not have to pay taxes on that. So basically everybody else is paying for your donation. You know, when you look at Jewish charities in America, you know, something like 38% of the money that Jewish charities raise are for Israel. 20% goes to education, which is essentially ensuring that their kids are indoctrinated into this Talmudic logic, this racially supremacist Jewish mentality that likes to say that Jews are the most important people on the entire planet. You know, only 4% of money raised by Jewish organizations are actually going to religious issues. Did you know that? Only 4%. Everything else about Jewish charity has to deal with strengthening and enriching the Jewish community. But the ones who pay for it ultimately are you. You, the general public, because the donors are simply writing it off on their taxes and transferring the loss, their loss, to the public treasury. Because the public treasury simply reimburses them at the end of the year. When I look at, like, issues where, you know, 4,000 rabbis, you know, are attempting some mannequin challenge. I mean, imagine this is paid for by you. I don't even know what a mannequin challenge would be. Says they failed at it, but it had to do with the Chabad Lubav. But guess who paid for it? Ultimately, you did. When you arrange for something like 10 to 12 billion dollars to be raised and sent to Israel, who pays for that? You do, because it's all just a tax deduction for the vast majority of these people doing the donating. And imagine the amount of employees. Do you realize that Jewish charity organizations employ more people than the Ford Motor Company? Yeah, that's right. The Ford Motor Company isn't as big as Jewish charity organizations in America. So you say, Fetch, you know, you're talking about the Jewish community. I said, well, you know what? I don't have time at this stage to quantify everything for you, because it's a massive problem across the entire cultural spectrum. I don't hear Jewish people daily getting on the phone, getting on the radio, sending letters to their editors saying, we need to stop this nonsense because people are starting to wake up and we don't want them angry with us. All we hear about is how anti-Semitic we are. What they're basically saying is, you're a scumbag because you don't like the fact that we are destroying your country. I've watched Jewish history, or read and studied Jewish history, for thousands and thousands, you know, for the thousands of hours, put it that way. I cannot find a single situation where they've actually created anything of value. And I've looked. They steal a lot. They can modify what they steal. Imagine, you know, America right now, 100% of its intellectual talent is data mined by the state of Israel. 100%. Because all of the data, all of the telephone records, all of the text messages, everything that is available to NSA is data mined by the Israeli government equally. Do you really think that they are not just stealing what is useful to them? Really? Are you so naive? Do you think that all of these geniuses that are so concerned about mass murder of Palestinians can actually create something of value? Dreisen, and right now there's something like, I don't know, 400 Palestinians have had to go on hunger strike because there's no charges, there's none, they just get detained. Is this what the West is all about? Is this what you are all about? You know, we see hundreds of Jewish groups. Hundreds, folks, hundreds. Working day in and day out to destroy Western civilization. And you're saying, well, Feds, you can't stereotype everybody. Well, I'm not stereotyping everybody. I'm saying there's a huge problem. And it's up for the individuals who understand the problem to use their own common sense to deal with the issues on a local, national, regional level as they see or deem necessary. I find it fascinating that Jewish people, by and large, want to tell me that I don't have any interests unless they satisfy Jewish interests. I find it fascinating that if I don't listen to what the Jewish politician says is in my interest, that somehow by exercising my own interests, that somehow I'm the anti-Semite here. Well, okay, if I'm against you, so what, dude? That's politics. But what I really despise within the Jewish community is the way that they will use mischaracterizations, character assassination, outright lies, purely for political benefit and gain. And then once they've cornered this gain, they want to sit there and say, well, you're just, you know, you're blaming us because of your failures, as if somehow we were even playing by the same rules. So important here, folks. Understand the rules that you're playing by and the rules that they're playing by. They're not the same. They're just not the same. So, you know what? Trust me, if I can pick up my golf ball and I can walk it to the green and putt it in from 2 feet, and you're going to sit there and hit the ball from the tee all the way to the green, I'm going to beat you every time. Now, because I picked up my golf ball and I carried it all the way to the green, I put it 2 feet from the green and I just putted it in. And the fact that you lose to me every time, do I have a right to blame you for your failure to not beat me? Or is there something wrong with me and the rules that I'm playing by that makes me a little less seedy or a little bit seedier, I should say? That's what's happening in our world today. We're not playing by the same rules. We're playing by our Western esoteric moral values, which are linked and rooted in Osirian systems. And the Jewish people are playing under Talmudic systems that don't recognize any rules. They don't recognize any values. In fact, they hold human value in contempt because you're not human. We look at what's going on in the West, and we see this massive invasion going on. Tens of millions of people, folks. Tens of millions. And everyone says, oh, well, you're just xenophobic. No, I'm referencing as tens of millions of people coming in. How does that make me xenophobic for recognizing a fact? And the fact that these people coming in can do nothing to benefit our Western civilization. In fact, all that they're going to do is essentially carve out their own spaces and create parallel countries within these countries. And we have politicians engineering the right of franchise, and that's the most critical point here, so that these invading immigrants can now further gain dominance in what are formerly Western countries. And they say, well, you know, you Western, you white men, you went out and you did. But you know what? We did not have politicians on the inside engineering this. Well, actually, we might have in India. I don't know. But the bottom line here is that there's a need to stand and fight. And nobody wants to see this to get into a shooting war. And it seems like the Jewish people, or at least a percentage of Jewish people, they want to see that. They're gung-ho about this anti-Islam, anti-this, anti-that, almost to the point of trying to whip people up into a violent frenzy. But what I'm saying is, guys, if you're going to stoop to that level, and if you're going to be brought down to that level, if politics and circumstances really take you to the level of absolute violence moving forward, and we all have to recognize that that is the Jewish game plan if you cannot bring it under control, then if it gets violent like that, as an effort to protect your national interests, all foreign elements would have to be dealt with, and you should and must include this Talmudic element. You can't sit there and say, oh, this side, this Talmudic element is okay, while you're going to spend all your efforts and time on another element outside. They must be dealt with accordingly. Both elements relative to Western civilization. And remember, the rules are not the same. The rules they're playing by, they don't care. Look at what they're doing in the court systems. Every day now, you hear you're hearing stories about how some immigrant, some migrant from some country came in, raped some woman, and because he didn't know better, they gave him 6 months probation, and they're not going to deport the guy. Are you trying to tell me that these people are animals and they don't have a moral compass? That's what the court seemed to be telling me. And if they are indeed animals, why are you allowing animals into our country? But remember, they have no remorse, no mercy, no morals, no values, no ethics. So they will use the courts to what? To further destroy Western countries. And it's now pretty much systemic. It's in the courts, it's in the political system, it's in the education system. It's even in the police. Police aren't even doing something, for goodness sake. They seem clueless. The intelligence services don't want to seem to do anything. So, I guess a couple choices. You either lay down and die, or you begin to do a two-prong system. One is to start to pull information and knowledge back. Not everything has to go, especially within your organized efforts out there. And we see some success about this. You know, we've heard about Antifa in America being infiltrated. An absolute must. These Antifa units are like the front guard of this Marxist Bolshevik system being designed to destroy, like America, for instance. And they have the same type of Antifa units all over the Western world. So taking them down is an imperative. You know, the brown shirts of the Germans, I think I heard this on Blackbird Nine's Breakfast Club, but it's something that I've known and agree with. You look at the brown shirts, they were basically brought up because you needed your own paramilitary force to defend yourself against these Bolshevik paramilitaries. And remember, in Germany in the 1920s, the Bolsheviks, Jews, actually managed to take over Munich for a few days and declare it their own country. They forbid the teaching of German, even in German schools. So we're not dealing with a people here that are sane. They're not nearly as rational as you think. They've lived among you for thousands of years. They know how to treat you. They know how to talk. They know how to pull on certain things to get you to agree with what you want. They want you to agree with. And hi, 704 area code. Welcome to Inside the Eye Live.
Good to see you. This is Frank.
Frank, good afternoon. Welcome to Inside the Eye Live.
Thank you. I hope you don't mind some low-level thinking input.
Well, you're not.
I think kind of like this Antifa. I heard, by the way, that one of them was found to be working for the is an employee or was working for the SPLC. I think of them like ISIS, kind of like the United States of America's version of ISIS,
yes.
Because ISIS works for the interests of international Jewry.
Correct.
And, you know, all of these groups that you talk about, all of these groups, these elements, these organizations trying to destroy the United States, you don't have to look very far to find out that pretty much all of them were created and run by Jews. And I hear all these people that want to, you know, they want to scream and rant about illegal immigration, you know, the out of control and immigration problem. But if you say, well, do you know who's behind it? Do you want to talk about that? Oh, no, we can't talk about that. We'll just talk about the problem. We're not going to talk about what's driving it. I was listening to the local radio news in the past week or so, and they were talking about the problem with anti-Semitism and, you know, I guess how it's growing and whatnot. And they were talking about the recent rash of these threats, these threatening phone calls, bomb threats or whatever, to the Jewish community centers and synagogues or whatnot. And, you know, the story went on for a couple of minutes, but there was no mention. And this, I mean, this is just like in the last week. There was no mention that the guy who, or the people, the, you know, group of people, the family, who I think are just a front group for Israeli intelligence, that they were caught in Israel and that they're Jewish. There was no mention of that. That is proof positive right there that this is a conspiracy, an organized conspiracy, and all the media, mainstream media down to your local news stations are in on it. And anyone paying attention that works for those organizations, I mean, these are college-educated people. They must come into contact with some real information from time to time. So they're going along. So they're what they project onto Joseph Goebbels. You know, they should be brought up by their own definition, by their own standard. They should someday be brought up on war crimes charges, right?
I agree.
You got people in the United States that are fairly outspoken. There's I think the senior editor of the New York Times has come out and said we're on the side of ISIS. We support ISIS. A bunch of other Jews have come out in Israel saying we are for ISIS. You know, we support ISIS, but there's no mention of it anywhere. There's no outcry from Rush Limbaugh or even the Alex Joneses, you know, of the media. And it just, it's incredible, but everything involves the Jewish problem and the inability and the unwillingness to take it on. So, anyway, interesting show. I just had to add that, and, I appreciate your time.
Okay. Thanks, Frank. And everybody, that's Frank in North Carolina. Again, telephone lines, if you'd like to call in, 1-347-688-2902. That's 1-347-688-2902. As I try to remove some of these numbers from my, I'm supposed to remove these just for security reasons. Now, we're not blocking you, of course, but removing you from the conversation. Yeah, see, Frank raises an issue that we're kind of hinting about here. See, it's impossible. It's really impossible for us at this stage to grasp the depth of the conspiracy, but we know that the conspiracy is there as a national. In other words, if you're a nationalist, and again, I'm kind of pretty open here. A nationalist doesn't need to be white in my book. Look, I've got a lot of, when I was in America, man, I had a lot of good Chinese, Taiwanese, even mainland Chinese, that were very nationalist towards America. I don't see the Chinese working together to buy off my senators. I don't see the Taiwanese working overtime to raise billions of dollars to send to Taipei so that they can, quote unquote, have their homeland. I don't see the Thai community doing this. I don't see the Philippine community doing this. I don't see, well, the Mexicans, I don't know what they're doing, quite frankly. But I don't see German groups doing it. I don't see the UK. I don't see any group in America engaging in behavior that could be perceived as treasonous other than within the Jewish organizations. You know, the Jewish organizations, guys, it's huge. I think it reported something like $26 billion in total revenue the past year or so, past year, maybe 2 years ago. $26 billion. And if we go back into time, into the early 1900s, there were over 1,000, that's right, 1,000 Jewish organizations on record in 1895. 1,000. This is what you're up against. You are up against an organized culture that's primary purpose is to defend and to project and to protect their own culture. You be damned. They don't care about the United States, folks. It's all about what type of shekel can we take out today? And the network, imagine if there's over 1,000 in 1895. In fact, I think in 1902, the American Jewish Yearbook counted thousands. That's right, thousands of Jewish organizations across the United States. That includes schools, clubs, and their fraternal lodges. And if it was thousands back then, imagine how big it is today. I think there's over 4,000 recognized NGOs, Jewish NGOs, in the United States. Again, as we discussed earlier, the vast majority of those dollars raised goes to Israel. So they engineer, meaning the Jewish networks out there. Guys, it's a network. It's an infiltrated network. And it's across the United States and it's across the West. They teach and preach to you all about inclusivity. Try to become inclusive into their groups. You try it. Challenge you. Go do it. Tell me what it's like. They teach and preach about tolerance. Try to go into their groups and really bore into what's going on. It's not going to happen, folks. You can try it. I'll sit here. I already got gray hair. It's going to get a lot grayer before you're ever able to bring me back some positive information. 619 operations. 619 operations today are Israeli-focused organizations. 619. You're paying for basically Israel. From the 562 area code, hi, welcome to Inside the iLife.
Good morning. This is Mr. Todd Keltner calling from your former loving area of Redondo Beach.
Redondo?
And I try to catch you every Saturday. I missed you last Saturday. I was up in the Bridgeport Trout Opener. Took my son up there. Had a lot of fun.
Yeah, that's
I wanted to. I wanted to give you that, though, you know, about the Trout Opener. I know you kind of missed the fishing here.
You know, they were talking about fish before you get going. They were talking about fish recently here, and they're like, what type of fish? I said, no, what we really like over there is trout. You know, I was just talking about that about a week ago. So kind of.
Oh, my gosh. There were some real nice beauties caught, too. A lot of snags and stuff. But let me get to your point. I enjoy what you say because you really put it out there on the way of how people think, groups think, groupthink, I would call it. And I called before about a book, The Quick and Dirty Guide to War, and how we talked about how certain families rule certain things. And these ideas and stuff promulgate from them out. And then those decrees from whatever those heads of family say, like the white dragons, you know, they're all out there. You know exactly what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. And it seems to me that the Hebrew community, because I don't call them Jewish, Jewish is a slang term for Judah. Okay. It seems to me that the Hebrew community has forgotten a huge, huge depiction of themselves by their book. They're cursed. This is a cursed people.
Yes.
Everything they touch gets screwed up one way or another. Am I not right?
Well, I would say so. I mean, I try to give them the benefit of the doubt, but come on.
Okay, now let's break it all down into five areas. Okay, transportation, power, food, water, and then the fifth, I always forget the fifth one. But these five areas, you cannot, and isn't it interesting that we talked about this before, that they have 500,000 Mossad agents all around the world willing to kill themselves for Israel, for this Rothschild idea of what a state is. And there is, Israel has turned into a totalitarian state. Not a state of any sort of form of democracy.
No, it's
a state. If they think there's democracy there, then they truly are living in a vaporized LSD vacuum these people that call themselves Jews, I would guarantee you 90% of them can't even tell you where their family lineage is and the papers to prove it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All that stuff got burned up in the libraries when Titus burned Jerusalem to the ground. And then in 121-70 AD, another burn to the ground. And you were talking about Masada earlier. Okay. These people, it seems to me that everywhere I look, whether it be on LiveLeak.com, everywhere.
Hold your thought.
They're the most,
Todd, hold the thought. Let's carry you over into the next break as we're going into it.
Sure. Because I do want to finish my thought.
Great. No problem. That's Todd, everybody, calling from Redondo Beach. It's Fetch Inside the Eye Live, intelligent for the politically aware. Everybody, welcome back. It's the Fetch Inside the Eye Live, intelligent media for the politically aware. Heading right back to Redondo Beach. Todd, hi, welcome back.
Right. So one of the things that I don't think that it's brought up very much, but there seems to be this massive hegemony here in America by a small certain sector group of people that says you need our help. Instead of, look, I look at it like this. We shouldn't give anybody any help. Get up off your ass and do something, you know. And this whole thing of dumbing down, lazying, it's not just our country. I've been around the world, and so have you. There's fat people everywhere. I can take you to a country where there's people that are emaciated, but I can find a place in that country where there's fat asses, okay? So this whole idea of no food even is another thing that's made up, okay? It's all this misdirection of information of what the real truth really is, and it is controlled by a small group of people. You and I both know this.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, hence your problems with your program and other people on Freedom Slips. More and more I'm beginning to think that, I'll say it straight out, that InfoWars seems to be a kind of a, you know, a Stratfor right down the street from them, which is basically a Mossad outfit. I'm beginning to have my doubts about InfoWars. Okay. Good information coming out of there. But like everything, you know, how much fish are we getting and how much bone are we spitting out? And I think that in the end, for anybody that is living in this world, I think everybody truly wants their own happy place, happy stuff, happy things, happy ownership. And all these things have a dichotomy of not coming to you because of what is presented through basically continuously the Hegelian dialectic. All this greed from just one small, and it's less than 1%, you know that as well as I do.
Yeah.
And it's like basically, 1,200 families in the entire world or less that claim to have ownership. And I always kind of take people back to the book of Revelations where it says, you know, in the last days, these people are trading in all these commodities. But at the end of the verse, it says in the souls and bodies of men. And I look at my life and myself and my soul and my spirit as like, you know, I don't want to be programmed that way. You know, you can't have I have declared my own and given to my own certain prospect of my own understanding of what I feel is my religion. And I don't press that on people. I've walked away from the so-called church here in America. I've never seen a bunch of pastors, I don't care what gender they are, of bought out people. And, and again, it's this Jerusalem thing, only thing. And, you know, you see these churches backing this so-called quote unquote Hebrew idea when they don't even take the time, which Paul says if they studied their Bible right in the New Testament, he commended the Bereans. Why? Because the Bereans went and researched everything Paul said according to everything that was written down, and that's including the book of Enoch, that's including the books of 1st and 2nd Maccabees, that's including all these things, okay? And isn't it interesting that the church goes along with this Jewish idea to not look into these books? Because if you do look in these books, when you look in 1st and 2nd Maccabees, well, there's your Pharisees, there's your Sadducees, and there's your Zealots. That's how they all started. You get a great idea on the mindset. This idea, okay? And it's so funny that when you read in the New Testament how they say to when Paul's being persecuted by the theologians, quote-unquote, and the ideologues, quote-unquote, and the leaders of the Hebrew people. And remember, he was taught under Gamaliel. You can research this man, Gamaliel. He's in all kinds of Hebrew, Talmudic scripture and all this. Paul even outthought this guy. Okay, that's what it says in the New Testament. My thing is that when Paul says, look at you guys, you know, you claim to be all this hierarchy of spirituality, but the first thing you do is you cry for someone's death. How is that?
Yeah, that's disgusting.
And that's the Hebrew mentality. That's this Mossad, whatever mentality that comes from Israel that seems so just benign.
We see it everywhere
underneath, and it's working
too. I mean, all this political correctness intolerance is that mindset. I mean, they can't tolerate anything.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And look at all the snowflakes, these men that want to be transgender because they think it's the cool thing. It's kind of like a junkie looking for drugs, that the real high is not the drug itself, but the adventure getting it. A lot of people know this in psychology, okay? And now that they're seeing that the rug is pulled out from underneath them and that people ain't going to tolerate, them throwing their lifestyle in their face, like, hey, if you want to live that way, that's fine. Just keep it in your damn house. I don't give a damn what you do behind your closed doors.
Yeah,
it's none of my business. But you come out here and you throw it in my face and you throw a glass vial with other glass in it at me. Hello, Antifa, and the girl with the moldy hair that got the crap kicked out of her. Okay, she did the same for me. I don't care what group you're from. Okay, the thing is that they've created this dialectic of no respect for any group, you see, except for their own. You've got to respect our religion and not these others, or in intolerance to the intolerable.
Yeah, okay. It's interesting.
I call it.
You know, Todd, in 1998, I was listening to some radio stuff, and there was an interesting lecture about how this was on a college campus, and he was talking about how we are setting ourselves up to tolerate the intolerable, like you're saying, and this will be the recipe for tyranny in America, and it must be stopped. And this was 1998, this guy was talking about this.
And well, I heard that. Got a little interesting story for you. I was actually under one of the professors that brought out the Dead Sea Scrolls to the public because he smuggled in a spy camera. And guess what? He was an atheistic Jew. And it was interesting. He wrote a bunch of books. Of course, they all do. If they're in college, they have to. But it was interesting when I confronted him on his stuff, his theories and hypotheses. I says, don't you think it would be better that if you have someone like me in your class that has been around, I traveled the world by that time, that when you spout off this crap to the class, would you please say it's my theory or my hypothesis? Don't put it out there as fact, because if I'm in your class, I'll call you out. I'll tell you that's not true, because you have no historical basis for it. If you show me something historical other than one line in one manuscript, then fine, we can go there with that. But if you've got no artifacts, nothing, then let's not go there. Okay? Back it up with something more substantial than just hearsay and something that you put down on paper to write a book so you can make a couple hundred thousand or Doubleday or whoever. And that's most of your college professors. And I'm going to tell you something else. Our whole university system here in the U.S. is complete garbage. It's complete garbage.
Yeah, and they're paying a lot of money.
If we really wanted a good university system, we would say, listen, we ain't discriminating against anybody. You come in here on your own merit. We ain't giving nobody no free ride at all. And professors, by the way, you want to know why the fees here in America are so high for the universities? Those professorships have pensions to pay. Okay? Think about that.
Mm-hmm.
These are large pensions. And when you talk about some schools like University of Texas or UCLA or USC or Loyola Marymount or any of these others, you're talking donors are to the tunes of, like, UT is over $1 billion a year, practically. I mean, UT just bought, 5 years ago, close to $1 billion worth of gold. I guess that slipped over everybody's head. How does a university have money to purchase $1 billion worth of gold? I thought they were all supposed to be for higher education.
And nonprofits.
If anybody thinks our schools in America are for higher education, they're deluding themselves into whatever, because it's not. It's a joke. When you and I went to school, I'm sure you were just grilled and you had to know your stuff. You couldn't come to school whining that the dog ate your paper.
No,
or chewed your pencil.
Never worked.
You never work. And you see these snowflakes going to school this day and age, and you see the teachers. My God, the teachers are some of the most abysmal people I've ever seen in my life. They shouldn't even be up there in front of the class. They should be retired. Yeah. The only reason why they're doing it is because they get their tenure after five. After 5 years, they're good and golden. But see, once that drive is gone, it's gone. Then they just float on through for the next 15. You see, that's our education system. And everything has become so corrupt at the higher parts of the education system, where you have, you know, people that are in charge of where the money goes. How about LA School District when they had over, what was it, 3,000 or 30,000 cell phones. I think it was from Verizon that weren't even being used. But because someone was on the board and they had a friend that was at Verizon, they got the contract, paid for it, and of course they got a nice hefty kickback from that person.
Yeah, okay? A huge commission
on that deal. And that's how it all works. And if you go and let's look at how this works, where does all this foundational kind of thinking of this corrupt way start, and where does it come from, and who allows it? Okay. And you can look and point directly at certain individuals, and you and I know that it all leads to somewhere. And you can point. We can point fingers all we want all day. And it's not until these bastards see an arrest and their hands put behind their back and they're read the riot act and they're hauled off to a prison because of the crap that they have done. And yes, the Hebrew community in America is at great, great, great promulgation of this, and they pushed it, And now the pushback is going to come.
They want to argue with us. Yeah, they've argued with us for 10 years, 20 years about how, no, you're being anti-Semitic. I said, no, we're trying to be clear with you guys, but you're just fighting. So it's like, okay, it must be all of you then.
Who's creating the fighting? And then, like you said earlier, it's now out all over the internet that ISIS is Israel. It is. And Israel is using us as the funder and backdoor airdroppers for weapons, drugs. And when I mean drugs, we're not talking STD pills or anything like that. We're talking meth. We're talking coke. We're talking heroin. Anybody thinks these ISIS players are not using hardcore drugs? They're out of their mind. They are out of their mind. Look at how they fight. These guys are whacked out of their mind.
Yeah,
I can show you on Live Leak where five of them go out to fight. They're so whacked out of a mind, a guy will shoot an RPG with a guy right behind him on his own team and blow his head off.
Yeah, I've seen that.
Okay, so, and these men who go do this, they've lost their mind. Because they have no ideology left. Their ideology is war, and how am I going to get paid to continue to kill? That's ISIS, okay? And you look at the way things are, and you know as well as I do, you've spoken many, many Saturdays about this, that things are decaying pretty fast, in my opinion, at this point.
Mm-hmm.
Barriers are being broken down. People are getting way, way tired of shelling out their hard-earned hours. All I can say is hours now, because they're paid in fiat, which is French for fake money. And there seems to be no end in sight for debt. There seems to be no end in sight for complete ownership of your home, your car, even your children, or even a walking stick, for crying out loud. Somebody wants to own it all, everything you freaking own. And to me, there's nothing in humanity that says that that's right. Everybody knows that there's something dichotomically wrong about that thought process. And if you look at how America is decaying in a very fast way, because most of our manufacturing has been shipped to Brazil, India, China, some to Germany, some to France. People don't know about those, some to Canada.
Yeah, Todd, that's why I was talking a little bit about the Venezuelan case today. It's like, guys, you're being set up for what they're doing to Venezuela.
Yes, exactly. I was going there with that. Thank you. You took the words right out of my mouth. And if you look at what the backdoor dealings that we've done through, you know, certain alphabet soup agencies down south in Venezuela, that country is in almost complete disarray. Yeah. Complete disarray. I mean, I would not even venture to go there. I wouldn't even fly. That's one of the countries right now not to fly into, because you may not make it out.
Yeah, it's too much. Okay. I hear it's the chaotic situation. It's very difficult there. And I would
and
not want
you bring
to
up a lot of good points. But I think what you're telling people is, look, watch what your dealings are in your daily life. Watch where your money goes, how it's spent. Mm-hmm. Who are you supporting with your money?
Yes, absolutely.
What are you doing with your life and your hours? Do your hours make any sense to you at all? If they don't, get up off your fat canoe, get up and start living the truth. Living the truth means you investigate. As an individual, you look into.
Yeah, you don't have to.
And if you see the rhyme and reason with it, just like you said before, if you see the rhyme and reason in it, a duck is a duck, then it's a duck.
Mm-hmm.
It's quacking. It's walking like a duck. It's got feathers. The head's moving like a duck. That's a duck. Okay?
It's head under the water.
And you show this. You continually show this to the public. And the thing is I think we're coming to a point where people that are on the know have more than willing to pull her head out. It's like this thing. I'll tell you something very interesting. We all know about chemtrails, right?
Yeah.
We all know that they're very, very real.
And I don't have them here at all.
At the, at the Trout opener in Bridgeport, this little town of Bridgeport, I could almost hear two-thirds of the fishermen cursing the sky and the damn chemtrails. I'm not kidding. Two-thirds of the fishermen. Now, if two-thirds of the fishermen are cursing the chemtrails, that tells you how they're going to wake up to other things, the ideas, like who are the bankers? You see what I'm saying? And people are waking up real, real quick. Listen, any Hebrew citizen that think that they are God's cream of the crop, I would do a self-examination of yourself.
You know, and it's funny, I find them to be, I don't know about you, but I still engage them because I'm not intimidated or whatever. And I find them to be the most arrogant, obnoxious, demeaning people I've ever dealt with. They just think that their a-hole doesn't stink, if you know what I mean.
Well, it's the whole idea that they think that they're blessed and they're not. Everywhere from Genesis to Revelation, find me one chapter of a Bible, of the Bible, where in the same chapter it says God wants to bless them, but at the same end, he says, look, you're so damn stubborn, I can't. How can I bless you?
It's like, if your own God doesn't want you, why do you think we should tolerate you? Because that's what
my exact thoughts.
Your book, your own God doesn't tolerate you. So why should you be within the midst of all of us and our gods? And why should we tolerate you? What makes, well, why? Go talk.
And why should we tolerate the things that they have pushed, like the Bohemian Grove, the Elysian Grove, and the other entities that we know that are out there? They're even in Germany. And these are not of the people. These are planted in. If God even says, where did I tell you to put your children into the fire?
Well, you got a good half hour, and that's a great call. So, Todd, any?
Thanks for taking my call.
Hey, equally for the time. Everybody, it's Sketch Inside the Eye Live. Thanks for listening. Back next week.